Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That cut opening tonight's show is called Sacred Alchemy from the album of the same name by Diva Haley. And Sacred Alchemy, I think that's what we do here each week. We add to our cauldron, to our database, or our sacred psyches, all the new ideas we need to recreate the world with those things we believe to be sacred, evolutionary, and in sync with goddess ideals, in sync with the sacred feminine. We just keep adding to our sacred stew all the ingredients to make the world a better place for more of us. So, I think you'll ready. Round in my bonnet today. So, did you hear? Pope Francis has reaffirmed the nuns have been very, very bad indeed. He agrees that working with the poor, fighting for women's rights, and not promoting a homophobic agenda or radical feminist themes, and they need to be reformed. Well, I can't wait to see what the nuns' reply will be. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, I have a lot of problems finding these guys relevant, and respect went out the window a long, long time ago. And sort of along the same topic, did you hear about the new Jezebel article that's out? Catholic high school fires lesbian coach because of Catholicism. The Catholic Diocese of Columbus fired Bishop Watterson High School's much-beloved physical ed teacher and coach after learning she was gay and living in sin. Is that even legal? Jezebel asks. It's unclear, but at least those poor children are safe from the clutches of a devil woman who was plotting to turn them all into lesbians, one soccer goal at a time. Yep, the poor woman who was fired, her name is Carla Hale. She taught at Bishop Watterson for 19 years. The school's website still lists her as the department chair of Health and Physical Education Department, but she was fired last month after her mother's obituary effectively outed her. It said she lived with a partner named Julie and no Catholic men are named Julie. Neither the diocese, the school, nor Hale would comment, but Hale's attorney and multiple sources close to the situation, well, they all confirm the story. So we will keep following that. And on a lighter note, do you know about the Goddess Spirit Rising Conference in Malibu, California in September? Well, let me tell you a little bit about it. The first annual Goddess Spirit Rising Conference, an international retreat on the Pacific Ocean in Malibu, California, is going to be September 6th, 7th, and 8th. Join us for three amazing days of workshops, ceremony, and wisdom with world-renowned presenters, plus artists, musicians, vendors, readers, and healers. They say, for a description, as a reflection of her divinity, we invite you to be part of the celebration of her and the creation of a vision for a world that reflects her more closely. We seek to honor our diversity, the beauty of her children, and our collective contributions to a world built on community, mutuality, and reverence for she who is all. So for more information, you can either connect with them on Facebook by going to Goddess Spirit Rising, or their website is goddessspiritrising.com. And just a heads up, I will be on vacation next week, so no show next Wednesday or Thursday, but when I'm back, I'll make up for the missed show, so you will still get four shows each month. And tonight is a great show. First up, we have Julie McIntyre, author of Sex and the Intelligence of the Heart, Nature, Intimacy, and Sexual Energy. We're going to chat about things like the importance of intimacy with oneself, getting your needs met, how you talk to kids about sexuality, and working with your shadow. Then, after we cross the threshold, Susan Shumsky will talk about her practice she writes about in her book called Instant Healing, transforming your body, mind, and emotions in 5 minutes or less. Wow. I have to admit, I wonder how it works on fear-based people who are going mad out there. I'm sure we'll get a chance to chat about that. But first, I don't usually ask much for myself, but I'm going to put this out there, and thanks to those of you who heard me last week. First, I hope you'll subscribe to my brand new blog, Herstory with Karen Tate on Blogger. Please go to my Facebook page and like my new Voices of the Sacred Feminine radio page. And thanks again to Cindy Williams, my assistant, for helping me get both of those up and running. But the bigger favor, I'm really trying to sell out my remaining copies of my first book, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, so me and my publisher can part ways and go each our separate way. If you're thinking about a gift for yourself or a friend or would like this one-of-a-kind book in your library that tells about ancient and living traditions of Goddess and her sacred sites around the world, please help me sell out the remaining copies. Purchase them from any local bookseller or, better yet, directly from me, from my website at KarenTate.com. I have a Goddess store page there where I sell the books at a better price. Then you can get them new from the online sellers. Or, here's another idea, make a donation, and if you say it's a book to go to a worthy cause, tell me what it is. I'll send it there in your name. And hey, if you'd like to buy a big quantity for a fundraiser, we might even be able to give you a deep discount. So what do you think about that? I am trying to play something from Joe Carson here, and it is not playing. Okay, let's try this. Something is up with the switchboard tonight. So, I want to tell you about Joe Carson's wonderful DVD, Dancing with Gaia.
Most people see humankind as really separate from nature and separate from the earth. I'm as much of this earth as a rock or a tree is. And I came out of it. This is my mother planet. I grew out of this earth.
As long as we conceive of divinity as above us or outside of us, or that our bodies are somehow less divine than spirit, there's no way that we can change our course.
Blood of her veins, the rivers, voice of her breath, the wind, fire of her will, erupting volcanoes, green of her hair, those beautiful, lush, rolling grass hills, strength of her spine, that's the mountain's tall backs, Persephone, moon maiden, whose returning steps grant springtime once more. These are the opening words from Dancing with Gaia. Dancing with Gaia is a wonderful film about the goddess, sacred sexuality, and about connecting to the earth and ways to do just that. It gives you tools to connect in a very real way to the landscape and spirit of the earth around you. It's also visually stunning, and the DVD comes packaged with a useful booklet, and it is only $20. So learn more about connecting with the landscape of the goddess, both internally and externally. You can find out more at dancingwithgaia.com. And as you may have heard me say before, I know the DVD very well, and I do highly recommend it. Well, the chat room is open, so I want to thank those of you who are there listening. Please send your comments or post your questions. And it's time for our first guest. Let me thank Julie McIntyre for her patience during my housekeeping and announcements, and let me introduce her to you before we begin our chat on sex and the intelligence of the heart. Julie is the director for the Center for Earth Relations, and for over a decade has worked with the Sacred Pipe, Medicine Wheel, Sweat Lodge, and Vision Quests in facilitating closer human bonding with the earth. She's devoted to helping people reclaim their ecological identity, and she mentors adults, young adults, and children on the sacredness of earth relations, the heart as the organ of perception, the ecstatic path, medical herbology. She has a private holistic health practice working with herbal medicine and chronic illness, sacred plant medicine, spiritual mentoring, ecological reclamation of the soul, becoming authentic, and of course, sexuality. She's guiding a 5-day intensive and a week on wild earth, wild women, for women with body image deficits, disorder, eating disorders, self-loathing, and disconnection. She's the author of Sex and the Intelligence of the Heart, Nature and Intimacy and Sexual Energy. You can see more of her and her work at sexandtheintelligenceoftheheart.com and also GaianStudies.org. That's G-A-I-A-N studies.org. So, Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy you're with us, too. I think it's so important that women and men sort of reclaim their sacred sexuality. And too many of us grew up, I think, with Judeo-Christian mores that sort of have us still dealing with shame issues around our bodies. And, you know, that's not what goddess ideals are about. So I thought this would make a great show because, you know, goddess is about reclaiming our sexuality, you know, being more in touch with our bodies in a more positive way. So, you know, let's get to it. So where do you think would be a good place to start, Julie? What should our listeners know probably as sort of a, you know, sort of the foundation for what we're going to talk about tonight?
Well, I was listening to you doing your housekeeping, and what came to mind was a line from Hafez. It says, every desire of your body is holy. Every desire of your body is holy. And we've gotten so far away from the sense of sacredness and our bodies, our connection with the earth. We've gotten away from, you know, it's really hard to keep our balance right now. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Well, you're so right. And, I mean, and I think many would, you know, sort of go back to maybe even the Bible as the beginning of the source that made us disconnect, because after all, we were told that nature was not sacred, that, you know, women and animals and the earth were here to serve men, and we all became commodities. And the sacred sexuality, the sacredness of the land, the sacredness of the animals, the sacredness of women as life givers, that all sort of went down the drain.
It did. And some of that stuff is still happening. It just looks a little bit different. Some of the same arguments are still going on. And it all comes down to power issues, you know. People feel like they don't have power, they don't have power in their own life or power over other people, but it's all struggles over power. And
absolutely.
It looks like other things, but that the core of that is all power stuff.
I think you're right, and sometimes I think it's fear stuff too. You know, fear of losing control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fear.
But even that, even when you say control, that's got a hint of power in it.
Yes.
You know, fear
of
losing power.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're probably right. The power is really at the root of all of it, because, you know, it's almost as if, but, you know, that's really coming from a place of weakness, because it's really not coming from a place of strength, because if you have to dominate others in order to, I don't know, shall we say, be on top, I don't think that says a lot about your self-worth, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why I'm a lot of my teachings, the foundation of it is addressing that in different ways, like with the class coming up with the women or with my apprenticeships. It's all, everything starts where you are in your core, and rewriting scripts and falling in love with yourself, falling in love with the earth over and over again, but really getting to the core of who you are, and can you live inside your own skin? Do you like your own company? Can you call yourself beloved from moment to moment? I mean, that's real power when you have that center inside of you that is so whole, and all the parts of you are integrated, and you have integrity with word and deed. That's where my passion is. That's where I'm. That's what gets me up every morning, and that's why I fall in love with teaching all the time, is to watch people go through their beliefs and their values and say, oh, that doesn't serve me anymore, that one doesn't work, that doesn't feel good, that's not who I am. Those are things I picked up as a child, and they served for a long time, but not anymore. And we all have to get to that point where we say, what's true for me right now?
Right. Well, and as you're talking, what you're making me think about is, you know, something we occasionally bring up now and again, but I think it's so important, you know, it's always worth repeating. You know, patriarchy sends women a lot of signals that they're not perfect. I mean, just look at how much money is spent with cosmetic surgeons. You know, they're getting boob jobs, they're getting facelifts, they're getting Botox. Now, that's not to say women don't, you know, can't be the best that they can be, but if you're doing it because I think maybe you have to check in with the motivation. We see young women walking down the runways, and they don't look like women. They look like, you know, they look like young boys. And how many women have eating disorders because, you know, their bodies don't look like these, girl boys, you know, that sort of walk down the runway. I mean, we were laughing once about, you know, cosmetic surgeons now even do something called anal bleaching. So
right.
that part of your body, you know, heaven forbid that the color of your skin there not be the right shade, you know. I mean, it's really insane when you think about it.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, but then you think about, like, the Venus of Willendorf, you know, and you think about, you know, these early goddess figurines that, you know, not that we want to be unhealthy or anything, but you look at them, they weren't thinking about stuff like this. You know, they were thinking about abundance and fertility and the things that really matter, not these trivial, shallow things that patriarchy tells us we should worry about, you know, when it comes to how we look.
Yeah, regardless of the message, we're acting on it.
Yeah.
I mean, the cosmetic industry is huge because women are buying it. They're buying it. So.
Well, and maybe some of them haven't heard there's an alternative, you know. They haven't heard that doesn't have to be the norm. But people like you are sending a much more healthy message.
Yeah, and so that gets back to my core and my work is what's true for you in this moment, regardless of what's going on out there, what makes you feel good, what makes you happy, what inspires you to get up every day, what body size are you comfortable in, not what do you think it should be, but what really feels good. And are you comfortable in your body? Can you fall in love with yourself over and over and over again, regardless of what's going on out there? So getting that core of you, your deep, deep selves integrated to a place where you can say no and not feel bad about it and look at yourself in the mirror and walk by and see a reflection as you're walking down the street, see a reflection in the window and say, hey, that's somebody I want to hang out with.
Yeah, because, you know, how many women actually have stopped looking in the mirror, have stopped looking at in the window because, you know, or we cover ourselves with baggy clothes, you know, because we don't want to see what's under there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we still have I'm astonished sometimes. I read the headlines or read news articles and I'm shocked. It's like we're going backwards.
I think so. Well, I mean, I think we get so many, so much bad information and bad role models and messages from television. You know, I mean, look at these reality TV shows and some of these crazy women and the lifestyles they lead that are sort of becoming role models for young girls. You know, whether you're talking about the, you know, the mothers who have their little girls, you know, dressed up like adults, you know, sort of the Joan Benet Ramsey you know, competitions, or you know, you're talking about the Kardashians, or I mean, all of those different shows. I mean, it's really just insane, in my opinion, anyway. You know, what they're telling women their lives should be about.
Right. Yeah.
Well, so you're the author of, let me just repeat your title of your book again, Sex and the Intelligence of the Heart, Nature, Intimacy, and Sexual Energy. Was there something that, you know, that maybe, is there a story there that inspired you to write the book?
Kind of what we've been talking about. I had a lot of issues and dysfunction around sexuality and shame. And body image, and started very young, and things when I was 11, I was molested, sodomized, really, by our hired hand. But at 11, I didn't even know there was a word for it. I just knew it wasn't right, and something felt really wrong about it, and it was scary. But I didn't have anyone to talk to or say it to or say it out loud. I was really pretty shut down and dysfunctional. And so there's this driving need that I wished if I could say something or do something for that 11-year-old in me, for the young girl in me, what would I say? What would I do? And I thought maybe this is how I do. I've always wanted to write. I've always been a writer, writing articles. And this came out of it, out of that need to say something.
And it's so important, you know, because when one woman says something, it gives other women permission to tell their stories as well. You know, I think about the Red Tent movement that's getting off the ground these days, you know, where women get together in the red tent, literally. And, you know, they should start to share these stories, you know, and it becomes such a powerful, I guess, catalyst for healing, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I wanted to do it in a way that it wasn't in the drama triangle, because I'm real sensitive about that sort of thing, where I took responsibility for the choices I made, even though I was unconscious and shut down at the time. I could have said something to somebody. I could have found somebody to say it to. At the time, I didn't know. But part of it is I was complicit by not saying something or not saying no even. I didn't even know how to say no at the time. Talking about those things where there's no emotional charge, it's just like walking through a photo album and looking at the pictures going, oh, that happened then and that happened. And this is how it changed my life, and this is who I became because of it, and this is great. I mean, it sucked. It was horrible. It was incredibly lonely for a good part of my childhood, but I love my life. I love what I'm doing. I love my work. I love hanging out with myself. I love my own company. And if that some piece of that book or my work can give that to someone else, then my life has been successful.
Isn't it interesting how it's usually, at least you seem to hear, it's always the challenges in life that, sometimes it breaks people, but then other people will take that challenge and turn it into something positive, you know, for themselves and for others. I find that really interesting. So intimacy, why don't we talk a little bit about the role of intimacy in our relationships? Or are you talking about intimacy with yourself or with others or both?
I believe we have to have intimacy with ourselves first before we can successfully have intimate relationships with other people.
So what does that mean, though, Julie? What does it mean to have intimacy with yourself?
It means that we know who we are. We know the human beings. Eric Burns said this really beautiful thing in the 60s, and he wrote Games People Play. He said, human beings are a multiple personality, and we all have a sense of that, but hardly anybody talks about it. So everybody's had the experience of getting, going to their closet to find clothes to wear to a dinner party. And part of you wants to wear jeans and a leather jacket and dark sunglasses. Part of you wants to wear this really beautiful, elegant evening gown. So, and we talk about that, like part of me wants to do this, part of me wants to stay home in front of the fireplace and curl up with a book. But how do we reconcile those different voices? They're literally different parts of our personality. They're ego states, or another new phrase Stephen's using is consciousness modules. But when we say that, part of me that wants to do this, part of me that, it's really talking about there's so many different parts of us. And so getting to know each part is, that's the beginning of intimacy. And what that does is when you sit down with them and meet them and hear what they need, because each part has gifts and virtues and intelligence and wisdoms and problem-solving abilities, so they make up our inner council. And we have this tremendous inner guidance system. If we sit down and start looking at each part, that's what integrity is becoming integrated. All of those voices become integrated. So
I wonder if another way to describe it in a way, sort of, or our moods, you know, would that be another way to maybe think about it as well? You know, we have different moods and demeanors at different times and different places, and, you know, maybe from moment to moment or hour to hour.
Moods gets close to it. So then the question is, who's feeling this? And does it feel good? Like sometimes I get really grumpy and I get down and just I start putting up this defensive wall. And it's really kind of an adolescent 16-year-old attitude of toughness. I put that on this facade. And it's moody. I'm very moody. But there's a particular part of me that's feeling that. And the goal of this work is to identify that, recognize it, and say, do I want that part making decisions right now? Because she's not very happy, and maybe her decisions, choices aren't going to be in our best interest. Or, you know, it also, is this adding to intimacy with my partner and the people I'm close to right now, or is it taking away from it?
Right.
And so it's really becoming really sensitively aware and conscious, and making conscious decisions and deciding from moment to moment how you feel and how you want to feel. And it's
so, do you think there's a problem out there that people, I mean, maybe we're just so distracted. We have our gadgets, we have our TV, we're so busy trying to make ends meet. Maybe, you know, we're having to run the kids here and there and do all of our errands. Do you think people really sort of have a problem of not really knowing themselves, and maybe as a result, maybe they marry the wrong person or pick the wrong friends, or who knows, maybe they choose even the wrong life path because they don't even know themselves?
Right. I do. Yep. And so I'm a huge fan of personal responsibility. And I would love to see a revolution in the way we become human beings and the way we're raising children. And a really radical idea that all public schools should be closed. And I'm a big fan of free-range kids. And you know, kind of the way this country was founded on was innovation, that everyone was free and encouraged to follow the passions and the interests they had for as long as they had it, and then go on to sometimes it was a lifetime, but there were no certifications or licensure or regulations. So yeah, I'm revolutionary.
Are you a libertarian?
What?
Are you a libertarian?
No. I'm a revolutionary.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about what that, in a way what you're saying sort of scares me. I think I see the idealism in it, but I think about the parents that are out there today. If it were up to them to see that their kids got an education, that really sort of scares me to death.
Which part?
Well, you said that we closed the schools and the kids would just
public
sort of...
schools.
Yeah.
I think public schools do more damage than they do.
Huh?
Public schools do more damage than they do good.
So what would be the alternative, though? I mean, so that everybody sort of, you know, gets some sort of equal, you know, start on an equal playing field, although there isn't one. But you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody doesn't learn to do arithmetic or somebody doesn't know how to learn how to read or write, or, you know, maybe I'm being too literal here. Maybe you're talking metaphorically.
Mm-hmm. No, because that not, I mean, algebra didn't make any sense to me. In fact, I think I'm missing the DNA segment that lets me think in numbers because they're hard for me. They're hard for me. But writing and being creative and teaching spontaneously and teaching for 6, 8, 10 hours a day, what I love, that's easy.
Right.
That I can do. So,
yeah, but you still have to balance your checkbook. You know, you might not need algebra, but you still got to balance your checkbook.
Well, I make sure there's money in there. But, yeah, I mean, basic skills. But everyone, what we get down to is a trust in the individual. And because we don't have trust, I mean, we have power struggles. We don't trust ourselves. We hardly know ourselves. And we don't trust our children to make good choices.
True.
So if we started young, deciding that each individual is trustworthy and treated them that way, that fosters trust and individuation.
And so you're saying people would be maybe more likely to follow their more authentic path than shoved in some little box that they're really not happy in.
Right, yes.
Now, see, that makes sense to me.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, so talk a little bit more about, you talk about the shadow. What is the shadow and why is it important in this theme we're talking about?
Yeah, shadow, it's also part of getting to know yourself because we have parts of ourselves that shadow literally means parts of us that aren't seen, that aren't acknowledged, that are in the shadow.
What we hide from people, the part of us we hide or maybe don't even look at ourselves.
Right, exactly, both of those things. And it happens very, very, very young because we come into the world, these incredible balls of energy and spontaneity and creativity, 360 degrees, Robert Bly calls them 360 degree personalities. And often we come in and maybe our family was expecting someone not so enthusiastic or not so loud or someone who colors inside the lines.
Or maybe a different gender.
A different gender. We came as a boy and they wanted a girl. Or we came as two boys and they wanted one girl.
Or we ended up finding out we're gay and, you know, that doesn't fit with our family.
Right. So all of those things happen. And what children do really young, because they're very perceptive and incredibly aware, is that they realize that to survive, they adapt to fit into their family. And so the gay part of them gets put into a bag. Or the loud part that maybe eventually becoming public speaker, so the loud part gets put into a bag. Or the artist who, as a child, colored outside the lines, or colored people as purple, or, you know, so the creative part gets put into a bag. Every part that gets put into a bag, in order for us to adapt and fit into our family, that shadow, those parts are in the shadow now. And so we spend a good deal of time putting more and more parts of us into this bag of shadow so that instead of a 360-degree, vital, energetic, spontaneous, interesting, complex human being, we're just a sliver of that.
makes perfect sense. I'm sure all my listeners are thinking back to their childhood and thinking about those, you know, these very sorts of things, you know, the boxes that they got shoved in and, you know, became the norm, even though it really wasn't what their more authentic self would have rather become or done or you know, whatever. And you know, and for some people, maybe these are minor, but for other people, I mean, you think about the kids who have maybe committed suicide because, you know, they're living in an environment where they're being told they're an abomination. I mean, these things can get pretty serious. You know, it's I guess it's all manner of the spectrum from, you know, small things that are less important to even life and death.
Mm-hmm. And what, yeah, everybody has those memories. Even if they're minor, there's a series of minor ones that add up to a big impact.
Right.
And everybody, as you said, you know, people who are listening or listen to this in the archives, everyone will have memories of that moment where they started to express themselves and it got shut down.
So now in your book, do you have recommendations for people to work with that shadow, to recognize it, to maybe help heal it?
Yeah, I do, and it's vital, it's important, and it's work. It's difficult, it's challenging, because once you start bringing parts of yourself out of the shadow, some of them are not going to be very happy about spending 20 or 30 years silent, in silence and darkness. So it's really spending time becoming friends with them and giving them permission to be out loud, listening to their needs, loving them, because it's like any relationship where there has to be trust extended both ways, and out of trust becomes a bond of the two or more, and that foundation then amazing things happen out of that. Tremendously
well,
amazing.
Well, you know, you're making me think about a TV show that was on a while back. I know the character's name was Tara, and she had multiple personality disorder. I mean, not, you know, literally. And it was an incredible show. I really loved it because she was such totally different people. And in a way, that's what you're talking about, you know, and she had to find a way to sort of reconcile all those personalities. And, you know, that's sort of different when you really have multiple personality syndrome. But I can see how it's parallel, in a sense, to what you're talking about, you know, because we've all had this experience, you know, maybe you're one person when you're dealing with your mother, maybe you're a different person when you're dealing with your father or your sibling or your friend.
Right.
Exactly. You know, we become who they expect us to be because maybe we're not free to be who we really are.
Right. Exactly.
So, all right, so the first important step is to find this, you know yourself, you know, have this intimacy with yourself is the way you phrase it. Then what about the intimacy with others? I mean, do you have some tips? I mean, you know, I always hear it's men, you know, men don't express themselves. You know, it's hard to get to know men, you know, they don't talk and share like women do. But do you find it maybe it's just as hard for women to have intimate relationships with other women and men?
Oh, sure. Yep. It's not gender specific. it's a cultural phenomenon, especially in the West, I think. So yeah, for other relationships, it's exactly like making relationship with different parts of yourself. You know, trust and developing a bond through trust. And trust is a choice. People think, well, you haven't earned my trust. But honestly, we decide every time you trust somebody, and it happens kind of organically. Most of us don't think about it. Occasionally we do. But we find, you know, all of a sudden we realize, yeah, I trust you. But some part of us has made a decision to extend trust.
Mm-hmm.
And or we've decided not to. So it's really a choice. And when it intimate relationships with another human being, the reason getting to know yourself is so important is because you then can say, I need, I want, or will you do these things? Identifying our needs and our wants and saying them out loud directly and taking full ownership for our happiness and engaging the other person from that place of vulnerability. And it's really becoming intimacy. The definition is to be willing to be vulnerable at will, and that even that word will scare some people. I mean, I hated it in the beginning. Like, vulnerable, that's
like means
death.
Weak.
Yeah. So trees taught me that. Trees, watching trees along the Mississippi River where I grew up, during when floods come and they're on the bank, those who are willing to be flexible and vulnerable and move with the winds and high waters, they are going to withstand the torrent of storms. So vulnerability is really just being willing to undefend. When we have defenses up, their defenses are easier to break down, to break you, because you have this hard, immovable object. But being vulnerable, you have, that's a place of power. It's a place of self-power in your center, in your core, that you decide to lay all of your defenses down, put all your weapons down, and say, I'm having a really hard time. Will you sit and talk with me? Will you hold me? Will you spend time with me? Or, you know, I really need you to do this thing because you said you were going to, and I am counting on you to do that. You know, we haven't had much time together, so let's plan a day or, you know, 24 hours and go away. Will you do that with me, and we'll sit down and plan this really wonderful time together?
Do you think people have a hard time asking that their needs be met like that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're terrified.
Is it because they're afraid they're going to be rejected?
That's part of it. And also, we're not taught how to do that from a young age. We're not. Our culture does not encourage. In order to do that, you have to know what you're feeling and you have to know what you need. So you have to really look inside and figure it out and get clear about it. But we're not thinking. A feeling is not encouraged. Thinking is, culturally, it's superior to feeling.
Well,
so
here
it really
we have
goes
the
against the whole.
Well, here we have the left brain versus the right brain, you know. The right brain, the goddess side, the feminine side, is about caring and sharing and willing, you know, being able to, you know, be vulnerable and open and flexible and transparent. And the other side is much more linear and you know, you don't have that caring and sharing, and it's much more authoritative and so most definitely, you know, in our patriarchy, these ideas of caring and sharing and speaking from that place of vulnerability, well, you know, that's sort of seen as weakness. You know, that's being like a woman, you know, and that's a weak thing, as opposed to, you know, the way society has taught us to be.
Yeah, it is. But it's so I'm a big fan of revolutions.
You
personal,
and me both.
Personal revolutions, you know. And even those sides of the brain, there's that the corpus callosum that holds the two together, and they need each other. We need each other.
Right. You need that balance. You know, so the people who generally work from the left hemisphere need some more right brain, and the right brain needs some more stability of the left brain. So absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you talk to children about sex and sexuality. What advice do you have there?
Well, my advice is to start young. And again, if the parents or the caregivers, the grandparents aren't clear about their own sexuality, if they have shame about it or they're embarrassed about it and can't own their own sexuality and their own sexual preferences, that's going to be problematic for children. They're incredibly sensitive and aware and perceptive, and we fool ourselves too much thinking they're not noticing that we're uncomfortable with sex or sexuality. So getting clear about your own is one of the first steps. The second one is starting really young with your children, developing an intimate relationship, a friendship with them, so that they know they can come to you with anything, that they trust that you will be there, that you'll be clear, that there will be no shame or judgment, and you can receive their questions and their curiosities and talk to them honestly, and that they can depend on you to tell them the truth. And those two are really crucially at the core of it, starting young. And it gets easier after that if you have that foundation of trust, clarity about your own sexuality, and understanding that children come in as sexual beings, and make sure it doesn't make you uncomfortable knowing that your child is a sexual being. That, you know, Masters and Johnson found this out decades ago, that little boys have erections in the womb, and often while nursing they'll have orgasms, and infant girls even while nursing will have orgasms. And if we're uncomfortable with that, those pieces of information, we're going to have a really hard time when our children reach adolescence.
So let's deviate from this a little bit. I'm wondering, when you're working with people and you come across, let's just say a woman, because I think most of my listeners are women, although I know I have some great guys out there because they email me. But say a woman or man, I guess it doesn't really make any difference, but say they have, you know, grown up with these sexual taboos, how do you help them start to break that down and start to feel okay with their sexuality?
Oh, a number of different ways, and it depends on the person and their story. A lot of times I'll just listen to their story, and again, then I'll have them start exploring what feels right. I mean, literally, you have them sometimes even list what they believe in now, what's true for them, and that's a starting point. That's a real important starting point. You know, what's true for you right now? What feels good? What do you believe? Do you believe that thing? Does it serve you anymore?
You mean like maybe religious taboos or something like that?
Religious taboos, or even we pick up a lot of messages throughout our life, either directly, oftentimes indirectly. So it's important to spend some time and just start there, sorting out where does this come from and why am I still carrying this? And then some time after that, then start becoming genuine, a genuine, authentic human being that's made up of beliefs and values from where you are now and who you are and who you want to be, who you know you've always were meant to be. And that won't happen if we're carrying other people's beliefs and values.
Okay. I guess what I want to ask you too is, what do you find is usually the most difficult, you know, for people to overcome? What usually takes the most work?
Shame. Yeah.
For something that they've done, or something that they would want to do or want to be, I guess any of those, or?
Yeah, all of those things. Something that happened in childhood, we were ashamed, you know, maybe we wet our pants in kindergarten or on the bus, we couldn't get to the bathroom on time, or we were 6 years old and our parents found us touching our genitals, which children do, they're curious, or even younger, where, you know, babies sit around without diapers on, they're going to touch themselves, it's the most natural thing, or, you know, and then someone will make a comment, and shame goes in and starts growing roots, and then it affects almost, it's an insidious thing that happens, and it's the hardest to work through and let go of.
What do you think it means to be an authentic and genuine human being?
It means that from moment to moment, you're deciding how you feel, what you're excited about, the work you're going to do, how you'll express yourself. It means being solid in your center and regardless of what's going on outside of you. Like, Viktor Frankl is one of my heroes. You know, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning. And it's a tremendous story. And even watching clips of him on YouTube, when you see, you know his story, that he was in Auschwitz and his entire family was killed. He survived, but he tells the story of how he made that his spiritual practice. And that everyone has to have to find meaning in their life. When you find meaning and purpose, then you can express it genuinely and authentically. But every human being, everyone has to have meaning and purpose and a reason for being alive and fall in love with themselves over and over and have their very own set of beliefs and values that they've created, that they've crafted themselves out of choice. And because it feels good and feels right and true, that's the short answer.
So if for someone who says to you, well, you know, I'm not sure what my life purpose is, do you have tips on helping them figure that out? I mean, obviously, like for you, you know, you had things happen to you when you were young and it's led you to your passion, myself the same. But what if, you know, I hate to say you've led, you know, what if someone's led an uneventful life, but what if nothing motivates them to, how do they find their passion or their life purpose?
Oh, yeah, they're hard to work with, but I have them, if they're students or apprentices, I have them do a series of exercises, like writing your life's biography. When you write your biography and everyone has moments in their life where they made pivotal decisions. And at the time, they didn't make any sense. But from where you are now, if you look back on your life and you go, oh, I made that decision, that was kind of odd. And then I did this, and that felt kind of good. And then I did this other thing. And when you look back, you can see there's a theme that has run through your life that you may not be aware of. And when
okay.
you start to see that theme, then you'll start to get an essence of your work. And another one I have them do is make a list of everything you love and everything you hate and your heroes. So three lists. Those lists and your life's, your biography will give you a tremendous amount of information about your life work, because everything you love is what you work for, that whatever form your work is, and the form doesn't matter. What matters is the essence and the feeling in that you love it and it's exciting to you. So everything you love is going to be part of your life work. Everything you hate is what your work is in opposition to.
You know, you are so right on. I'm thinking about my very own purpose, and you are so right on with this. I can see so totally how these exercises, you know, would lead to that, most definitely.
Yeah, they're invaluable. James Hillman wrote The Soul's Code, and he talks about your reverse biography for that reason.
I'm sorry, say that again, about reverse biography?
Yeah, James Hillman talks about it in The Soul's Code. And he talks about each one has a genius. Everybody has a genius. And one way to find that is to do that biography and look back at the main pivotal choices you made.
A reverse biography, that has me a little bit confused.
Yeah, it is confusing. So it's just literally writing it, and then from where you are now, looking back.
Oh, looking back. I see. Okay. Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, my mother always inspired me to fight for the underdog. Fight for the underdog because they're the ones that need help. So it doesn't surprise me in the least now that I'm working as a, you know, a spiritual activist, a women's rights activist. I mean, it just makes perfect sense, you know, now that you've said that, and working against the people who try to have power over, you know, the patriarchy and that whole thing. So yeah, makes perfect sense.
But that was already in you, even though she suggested it. It was in you. Like, my mother was trying to figure out stuff for me to do when I was like 12 years old. She's like, "Well, you could be a tool and die maker." That is not even remotely. So even though people suggest all the time what we should do, sometimes they know, they touch on, like your mother knew you enough to go, yeah, you should, this is in you.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, Julie, we're about out of time now. We've talked about a lot of important things, and you've given really great insight to listeners. Is there one last thing you might like to share with listeners maybe I haven't thought to ask you?
Oh, go boldly into your psyche and get to know yourself.
Okay. And why don't you go ahead and say the name of your book and your website again?
Sure. The book is Sex and the Intelligence of the Heart, Nature, Intimacy, and Sexual Energy. And websites, you can see what I'm up to at GaianStudies.org, GAIANStudies.org, or www.sexandtheintelligenceoftheheart.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and best of luck with your book. You're doing important work out there. Thank you for all the people you touch and you help. And, you know, keep in touch.
Thank you so much, Karen. I really enjoyed this a lot.
Okay. Well, me too, and I'm sure my listeners will as well. Good night.
Thank you.
Well, I see my next guest is on the switchboard, and I will be getting to her in just a moment. But first, let me play this the complete cut for you of Sacred Alchemy by Diva Haley. This is the full song that you heard just a snippet of at the top of the hour. And before you know it, we will be chatting with Susan Shumsky about instant healing.
Fire in my body, fire in my head, I'll come this
that was Sacred Alchemy by Diva Haley. Well, you know what that means. We are crossing the threshold into the second half of the show. And I want to share some breaking news with you before we start our interview with Susan. Perhaps you've heard today, 90 Republican cowards and four or five Democratic cowards blocked even a watered-down bill that will require that would have required criminals, people accused of domestic violence, and mentally unstable people to have background checks before they can get guns. Yes, you heard me right. 90 Republican cowards and four Democratic cowards blocked even a watered-down bill that would require criminals, people accused of domestic violence, and the mentally unbalanced to have background checks before they can get guns. Can any common sense legislation pass with these Republicans in office? We've seen them deny the Violence Against Women Act numerous times, and it finally passed by a hair when they were shamed publicly. They won't vote for equal pay for women. They don't care about a woman's right to her own body. They continue to constantly cut the budget, hurting millions of Americans to protect corporations. They continue to be fearmongers to keep the military-industrial complex fat and rich. And now this, something that 90% of Americans, including Republicans and gun owners, felt was reasonable and common sense. I repeat, 90 Republican cowards blocked even a watered-down bill that would require criminals, people accused of domestic violence, and the mentally unbalanced to have background checks before they get guns. You know what? Vote the bastards out of office. That is our only hope. If you're living in a state with Republicans who vote like I've just described, please know these men and sometimes women are not the future. They are not representative of goddess ideals. And if someone tells me again that Republicans and Democrats are all the same, I think my hair will light a fire. The majority of Democrats do not vote against women, gays, immigrants, workers, the social safety nets like Social Security, and reasonable background check legislation. Republicans are clearly obstacles to the common good and welfare of the average American. I hope you're paying attention. And you know what? Let's just print the bumper stickers up now. The GOP always against the common good. Well, don't forget, you should be letting loose your sacred roar and emailing and writing and calling the White House and your representatives and senators in Congress demanding that there be no chain CPI, which are cuts to Social Security. Please do. Seniors are already often living in poverty. It's immoral to cut their benefits so the richest corporations can continue to get their corporate welfare. Also, International Mother Earth Day is coming up on April 22nd. This is not to be confused with Earth Day celebrations. This is a bit different and separate, but equally important. If you want more information, you can go to the United Nations website, which is where I learned about this. Also, I'd love to meet you if you're in the Southern California area. I will have a booth and be on a panel in the Health Hut for an event out here called World Fest on May 19th in the San Fernando Valley. You can hear me talking about goddess ideals or feminine ideals for a sustainable future. And then in June, I'll be at the Long Beach Women's Spirit Fair with a booth, and I hope you will come by and say hello. And next up is our second guest tonight, Susan Shumsky, who is going to tell us about her book and her practice of instant healing. She says you can feel better in 5 minutes or less using powerful spiritual healing and affirmation methods that have proven effective for millions of people for the past 150 years. Whether you want physical, mental, or emotional healing, you can simply use these methods to change your life in an instant. So, Susan, welcome to the show.
I'm so thrilled to be here tonight.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your belief in this healing method. I'm sure there are lots of us out there that can benefit from it, Susan. You know, at the top of the hour, I don't know if you were listening to the show, but considering all we have in the news, you know, we just had the shooting in Pennsylvania, and now we had the bombing in Boston. There seems to be so much fear out there. Can this instant healing help people who are just so fearful that they either commit these acts, or maybe you're fearful because, you know, you don't want to be a victim of one of these acts?
Right. There is a lot of fear out there. People are feeling very tense because of things they read in the newspapers or see on TV. And most of people's fears are really unfounded, although obviously the people who were affected by these horrible, horrible tragedies were definitely affected. But for the vast majority of people, they can feel assured that all is well in their lives. And to get all riled up about these types of possibilities when they haven't happened is just really a waste of life. Unfortunately, causes people to just be stressed and tense, and it affects their mental well-being and their physical well-being, and that's not a good thing. And
right.
Yes, the method that I use, which is has various names to it. Some call it affirmative prayer. Some call it scientific prayer. They might call it affirmation. They might be calling it spiritual mind treatment or mind treatment or just treatment. These are some of the names for this very simple practice that helps people to affirm the truth, to claim the truth for themselves, and to live in the truth in their everyday life. And that's what I'm proposing in Instant Healing, which is my latest book.
So you say that people can transform their minds, gain self-empowerment and inner strength, and that sort of helps them become all they can be. It's funny how this, in a way, parallels what the last guest was talking about, you know, finding personal intimacy with yourself. You know, this feels like this might be icing on the cake for what the last guest was talking about. Why don't you speak a little bit more about that, Susan? How do we transform our minds and gain self-empowerment? You know, especially if you're, you know, if you're one of these people who have maybe been so afraid, and maybe you find it difficult to, you know, find your self-worth or feel empowered.
Well, that's very true. And if we go back to the ancient scriptures, for example, if we would read the very first verse of the first chapter of the Dhammapada, which was written by Lord Buddha, he says that all that we are is the result of what we have thought. He says that if a person speaks or acts with a pure thought, then happiness will follow him or her. If a person speaks or acts with an impure thought, then unhappiness follows him or her. So the fact that it is the very first verse of the first chapter of the Dhammapada leads us to believe that it must be a very important statement. And he's telling us that all that we are, not just some of what we are, not just on Tuesdays or every other Thursday, but all of what we are is the result of what we have thought. He also goes on to say that what we speak and what we do creates our destiny. So, in other words, we create our own destiny through our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. And if we are dwelling in fear, if we're dwelling on things that, imaginations of fantasies of bad things happening, then we can possibly draw those things into our life if we dwell on them long enough. The fact is that we can create a very positive outcome in our life by dwelling on, by having the attention of positive outcomes in our life through our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. So if we think, speak, and act in a way that draws very wonderful, joyous, happy, prosperous, fulfilled experiences into our lives, then that's what will happen. And we can create a new destiny for ourselves by using thought, word, and deed to change our minds and change our life.
So, Susan, I like to talk in examples. So, you know, rather than sort of hypotheticals or
right.
generalities, say someone,
right.
let's take a couple different things. Say someone wants prosperity or love or health. What sort
exactly.
of things should they be telling themselves versus you know, to get this positive result versus what maybe they're telling themselves that's maybe blocking them from achieving their goal?
Exactly. That's a very, very pertinent question. And I'm going to just, first of all, go back to something even more fundamental that you touched on earlier, which is the self-empowerment. Because, really, the self-empowerment is the most fundamental of all the issues that we need to address. So if you think that your listeners might be interested in learning a very simple self-empowerment affirmation, then I could teach it to them right now, which would help them
immediately. Go right ahead, please. Go right ahead.
Great. Great. So this is something that I would like everyone to say out loud. So just after I say a line, just repeat it out loud. And as you're saying this, just pretend as if your higher self or the part of yourself that is your true self is saying this affirmation. So when you say, I am, just act as though that is your I am self or your higher self that is saying the affirmation. So it just goes like this. And just repeat after me. I am in control.
I am in control.
I am one with God.
I am one with Goddess.
I am the only authority in my life.
I am the only authority in my life.
I am divinely protected by the light of my being.
I am divinely protected by the light of my being.
I close off my aura and body of light.
I close off my aura and body of light.
To the lower astral levels of mind.
To the lower astral levels of mind.
And I open to the spiritual world.
And I open to the spiritual world.
Thank you, God, Goddess, and so it is.
Thank you, God, Goddess, and so it is. That's lovely.
Yeah, so
would
that
be something you would say at the beginning of each day, maybe?
Yes, 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 absolutely. Before you go out or before you have to go to an important meeting, if you have clients, between the clients, and so on. This will maintain your self-integrity and self-authority. It's something that brings a tremendous self-empowerment. And it's very fundamental and basic to the entire program of changing your thoughts and feelings and emotions and speech and actions from negativity into positivity. So I wanted to start with that one. And then we can go on to some that might be good for prosperity, for love, for health, and so on like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, so the basic idea of this method is that you are stating the truth. You are stating the truth and, if necessary, also releasing that which is not true. So by claiming, stating, and claiming the truth for yourself, you are creating positive, powerful results in your life.
Susan, can I interrupt you for
Susan,
wait, can I interrupt you for just a moment?
Yeah.
Are you on a speakerphone by any chance?
No, I'm not, but let me just speak more into the telephone. Would that be better? Is that better now?
Yes, yes, please, because you sometimes you fade a little bit. So I'm
okay,
just,
let me just, yeah.
Okay, that's better.
No,
thank you.
I'm kissing the receiver now.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right. So what I was going to say is this method has been used for about 150 years, and I think it's been most popular in, for example, the Unity Church, Church of Religious Science, Centers for Spiritual Living, Science of Mind, some of which your listeners may have heard of or not heard of, but it's a method of affirmation, which was also very, very popularized by people like Louise Hay of Hay House, for example. So what we're using is these affirmations or affirmative prayers that help us to change our minds and thereby change our lives.
So, I mean, I hate to use this term, and I don't mean it in a derogatory sense, but it's almost as if we're brainwashing ourselves, or we're sort of maybe setting more positive neural pathways or something. I don't know if that's the right scientific term, but it's like we're sort of reprogramming ourselves to get rid of the negative thoughts.
Well, Karen, I think that is really a wonderful way of explaining it, because we've all been brainwashed to be so negative by all the messages around us for our entire lives by, for example, perhaps family members, perhaps teachers, perhaps religious brainwashing, media brainwashing. There's so much of that going on and has been for so long. And here's a way that we can counteract that we can create something new, something more positive, so that we can move forward now with great confidence and strength and change our minds, thereby changing our lives.
So what kind of things, for instance, let's take prosperity first. What sort of things maybe block us, and how do we shift gears to reprogram ourselves for prosperity?
Well, prosperity has to do with self-worth. It has to do with the fact that we do not value ourselves enough, and therefore we are blocking prosperity from coming into our lives. Also, there's the whole idea that prosperity somehow is bad. After all, that quote about can't enter the kingdom of heaven, you know, if a wealthy person, so on.
Right.
That quote has been a very great detriment to people for a long time, and the whole idea of sacrifice and that you have to be poor in order to be a spiritual person. You have to sort of live in a potato sack and not have any money, and that is virtuous. And thereby, such ideas in society really block people from their prosperity, when in fact we are worthy. We do deserve to be comfortable. We deserve to have a good life. And there's no reason for people not to be prosperous. So we can overcome this lack of self-worth, first of all, and then we could use some of the prayers. In my book, Instant Healing, there are 243 prayers. And they're prayers about all different subjects. Chapter 13 is called Attracting Prosperity. And if you like, I could do what's called the prosperity prayer.
Okay.
Here's a prayer for people, for prosperity. And it goes like this. Divine love through me blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive. Everyone and everything prospers me now. I am a child of God Goddess, created in God Goddess's likeness. My birthright is infinite abundance. Therefore, I inherit unlimited wealth. God Goddess is the supply of my is the source of my supply, and provides abundantly for me now. I prosper and succeed in every area of my life. All my needs are met. In God Goddess, I have no lack. God Goddess is my divine banker and financial advisor. God Goddess is in charge of all my financial affairs and provides all my needs and wants right now. Thank you, God Goddess, and so it is.
You know, I'm thinking more about this idea of our state of mind sort of creates our reality. And I think a perfect example of that, and listeners may have heard me say this before under different circumstances, but it seems to apply here. If you're born into money, for instance, and you don't know anything else but money, then it doesn't even occur to you that you're not going to go through life without money. You know, maybe I said that backwards, but I think you know the point I'm trying to make.
You're right. No.
I think it's harder for a poor person to believe that they are going to have money, because they maybe have to overcome what had been the norm for them. But someone who, you know, being rich has always been the norm, you know, it's like that doesn't even enter the realm of their consciousness, maybe.
very true. That's an excellent point, Karen. And what I might suggest for people who don't see themselves as worthy to have money would be something like the I Am Worthy prayer, which I could recite at this point.
Okay.
So it goes like this. I am worthy to be loved. I am worthy to be prosperous. I am worthy to be fulfilled. I am worthy to be joyous. I am worthy to be abundant. I am worthy to be content. I am worthy to have a joyous life. I am a divine being of great worth. I like myself. I love myself. I accept myself. I forgive myself. I trust myself. I believe in myself. I am perfect just as I am. I am lovable and I am loved. Thank you, God, and so it is.
Nice.
So
nice.
I think that working on this kind of deeper level can help people to develop the sense of self-worth and thereby begin to attract more prosperity. In other words, perhaps working on self-love first and then later working on prosperity might be a good thing to do for people who really do not feel that they are worthy to have money. And if you're raised in an environment where, you know, dirt poor or whatever, certainly that sense of worth is not there. It just isn't.
Right. Well, so I sort of get I get the gist. So rather than like maybe go into, you know, love or health, I'm really curious about you also have stuff in the book about overcoming enemies and saboteurs and psychic vampires. Why don't you talk about
exactly.
that a little bit? Because that's not the, you know, that's, you know, not so commonplace, I think.
Right. I mean, the thing is that what I did with these 243 prayers, I came up with various categories of things that I think people have problems with and that they need help with. And some of them are things like gaining inner strength and empowerment, healing emotions and deep-seated beliefs, healing and forgiving relationships, overcoming addictions and codependency, dispelling illusions and false perceptions, becoming all you can be, so on and so on and so on. And one of them is overcoming enemies and saboteurs. So, you know, there are people who have environmental saboteurs. They have people around them that are either draining them or that are sort of out to get them in a way. And obviously, we are responsible for our own reality because we created it through our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. However, there are, unfortunately, we don't know when we created that reality, if it was in this lifetime or some past lifetime, and we really cannot easily trace back, yes, I created this in my life. We just can't do it. It's
so you're talking about karma, maybe?
Yes, I'm talking about karmic results, and it's really impossible to trace those back. But what we can do is work with the energy that we have right now to overcome things like bullying or black magic or sabotage or, you know, finding ourselves incarcerated or something like that, or being a victim or having domestic violence. So all of these things that I just mentioned and more are addressed in this chapter, Overcoming Enemies and Saboteurs. So, for example, you know, if there's a bully, then there's a way for us to, we can use an affirmative prayer to help with that bullying, as an example.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of what you're talking about is really sort of focused intention, you know? And we do that in so many ways. I mean, we can call it prayer, we can call it spells. I know I took Kabbalah for a while, and they would have us wear this red string on our wrist. And honestly, whenever I saw it, I felt like it was a trigger to try to really sort of be my highest self, you know. It reminds me of, like, at the beginning of every year, I'll write a letter to Goddess, and I will say the things I hope to focus on for the year, the things I hope to bring into my life. And maybe a few times, you know, during the year, I'll look at it and sort of, you know, check my progress, you know. And I remember one year I wrote I wanted to get toxic people out of my life. And I, you know, and I thought about that when you said overcoming, you know, enemies and saboteurs and psychic vampires, you know. So really, these affirmations sort of help us sort of keep focused and not get distracted from what we want to bring into our life.
Exactly.
I was going to say, is there sort of a basis for doing this? I mean, I know you said it's been around for 150 years, but did it start somewhere? I mean, where did the idea to do this sort of come from? Or is it just from all different methods?
No, actually, it came from somebody named Phineas Quimby, who was a very unusual person who was able to heal people by them just coming in and sitting with him, and he would just see the truth for that person, visualize the truth, and say the truth about that person, and the person would be healed. One of the people that came into his office happens to be the founder of Christian Science, and many other people came in and studied with him and also with his students. People like the Fillmores, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who founded the Unity Church, people such as the founder of the Church of Religious Science, Ernest Holmes, who wrote the book Science of Mind, Emma Curtis Hopkins, and many, many others who were really the people that founded this movement. It's called New Thought, the New Thought Movement. You'd be very surprised at who belongs to the New Thought Movement. In the back of my book, Miracle Prayer, I have an appendix that has a long, long list of hundreds of people who are part of that. People who are motivational speakers today, such as Anthony Robbins and many, many others that you've heard of, such as Les Brown, or, you know, just you can name off any number of motivational speakers who are a part of this New Thought and who know about this New Thought movement. And
Susan, you're reminding me of last year I had a shoulder injury that nothing seemed to be helping. I did acupuncture, I did physical therapy, I had cortisone shots. I finally went to a theta healer. Do you know about theta healing?
I have heard of theta healing. Some people who have come to my classes are theta healers, in fact.
Well, for listeners who might not know what theta healing is, go ahead and Google it. But just in a nutshell, I sat there with a theta healer who talked me into, I guess, my body and my divine connection, with the divine, sort of recognizing that I deserve to be healed, blocking and talking me out of any blocks I might have had to my own healing. Now, you know, I'm a skeptical Virgo, and I have to tell you, I went to the theta healer as a last resort. And because I heard the healer telling me about some of the success he had, and he was a friend of a friend, so I said, oh, what the heck? And I went, and I was really amazed at the results. And a lot of this was about affirmations. It was about connecting with the divine source. And I have to tell you, listeners, my shoulder was healed within a few days. It was really unbelievable.
It works. It really does. This is amazing stuff. It really works. Positive vibrations have a lot more effect than negative ones, and we really can heal ourselves.
Right. So let me ask you, Susan, can this be used on a grander scale? I mean, this might sound crazy, but, I mean, can this be used beyond just ourselves or our families? Can groups of people use this to heal their community, to, for heaven's sake, maybe even heal the world?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, Chapter 16 is transforming the planet, and Chapter 17 is creating heaven on earth. And the prayers in those chapters are things such as a declaration of peace on earth, peace begins with me, make peace not war, prohibition on war, overcoming crime, so on and so on, and keep going until you get to, for example, treatment for world peace, treatment for universal love, treatment for heaven on earth, unity with all life. These are some of the prayers that are in those chapters. Well,
yeah,
I've tried to.
So let me ask you about some of these interesting tidbits you have in your talking points. What do you mean when you say people pray backwards?
Well, that's really interesting, and it started with what they call the secret. You know about the secret, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people read or saw The Secret, and then they decided they'd make a laundry list of things they want to manifest in their life by using this methodology, which is basically the same methodology that I'm talking about, which is using your thoughts, words, and deeds to create a different outcome for your life. So what they did is they made a laundry list, and it says, okay, I want the house on the hill and the handsome husband and the Mercedes-Benz and the 2.3 children and so on, and they made their long list. And then they may or may have gotten the things on their list, and then they found out that, oh, yes, now I have the mortgage that I can't pay, now I have the husband who's cheating on me, now I have, you know, all these problems are going on and on. Because when they made their list, they forgot to do one thing. They prayed backwards. And what I mean by praying forwards would be to first find out what is highest and best wisdom for you to pray for in the first place, rather than going off and making your laundry list of things you want to manifest. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that every one of us has a purpose or a mission. We have some reason for being here on Earth. There is something that we are here to do. And it's really important that we first get in touch with that, that we find out what is highest wisdom for us to manifest on this Earth, or what is highest wisdom for us to do on a day-by-day basis. And then make our laundry list of things that we want to manifest based upon our true mission, our true purpose, the true pathway that we are meant to do in this lifetime. So Susan,
isn't the hard part knowing what our purpose is?
Right, and that's why I teach people how to do that, not in this book, Instant Healing, but in my other two books that I've written. One is called Divine Revelation, and the other one is called How to Hear the Voice of God. And those books help people to get in touch with their higher self, to listen to that still small voice within, and to begin to make sense of their life by finding out what is highest wisdom, what is their divine path and purpose for their life. And by getting in touch with that still small voice within, then if they make their laundry list of things that are highest wisdom for them to manifest in their life, they will find that they are greatly supported by Almighty Nature, that they have sort of the wind at their backs, and that they easily and effortlessly move forward and are able to manifest things quite simply and quite easily by following that inner voice.
Well, I am going to, when we get off the air tonight, I am going to email you and invite you back to talk about those other two books. How about that?
Well, I would absolutely love to do that.
Okay, good,
absolutely.
Good. Because I how things work, I actually have an opening next month, so we'll talk about that. But sticking to this, because we still have a little bit of time, because I find this really interesting. Also, you talk about the law of grace. What is the law of grace?
Well, okay, we touched on the law of karma. The law of karma is really the law of consequences. The law of karma states, it is done unto you according to your beliefs. In other words, it is done unto you according to your thoughts, your words, and your deeds, as we discussed earlier. But the law of grace states, with God, Goddess, all things are possible. With God, Goddess, all things are possible. And so, in other words, it is possible for us to overcome the consequences of our past actions by getting in touch with and unifying with, merging with spirit, with a capital S, getting in touch with who we truly are, getting in touch with our true divine purpose, starting to walk that path, and in fact, then, with that connection, all things are possible. So that is the law of grace, which overcomes and annihilates any karmic results.
Hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. So tell me, obviously you must use this. Give us some examples of either how instant healing has changed your life or maybe some of your clients.
Well, you know, there's an interesting story. Let me see if I can find this real quick. Similar to the thing that you were having, which was an instant kind of healing that took place, physical healing. And I just want to talk about that. It's a woman who was riding on her bicycle, and unfortunately, she had put put the leash on her bicycle handle, the leash of the dog that she was walking. And let me just find this. I know I can find it really easily. It is somewhere in this book. I was looking at my book, Miracle Prayer, which has a lot of very interesting miracles that have taken place as a result of this same method. So this woman was riding in her bike, and obviously the dog went in the wrong direction, and she got caught up with the dog with her arm and fell off the bike, and her arm was completely torn out of its socket. And then she went to the doctor, and the doctor said that she was going to not ever be able to use that arm again. It was going to be always displaced, so on and so on. And she just kept affirming the opposite of that over and over as he was talking to her. Just whatever he would say, she would just deny it in her mind. And she just kept on praying and affirming a very positive result, and that her arm was going to be perfect. And she just kept affirming that over and over, and she taped up her arm and she went to bed. And she repeated a prayer treatment morning and night. She taped her arm to her side and went to bed lying down. And during the day when the pain was severe, she just calmly said, "Thank you, God, that every cell in my body knows its perfection and now manifests that perfection." And then the pain went away. And then when the surgeon looked at her x-rays 3 days later, he asked whether he had the right x-rays because they did not match her shoulder. So she then thrust her seemingly separated arm into the air saying yes. Her doctor still calls it a miracle, and she simply calls it the truth. She says, "We are constantly creating our reality and have the power to change the effects by simply realizing they aren't the truth about us, just the fact." So
you know,
there's a difference between the truth and the fact.
So explain that.
Okay, so the fact was that she had torn her arm out of its socket. The truth is, ultimately, the ultimate truth, is that her body is perfect, that she is in perfect health, and that she is a divine being created by the divine, and that she is always perfect in every way. That's the ultimate truth. So if you could keep affirming the ultimate truth about yourself, and you keep canceling the things that, like the doctor kept saying to her, the doctor, when he x-rayed her arm, and he saw that it was severely separated, and he said it would require surgery, he said the following things. He said, "You won't be able to lie down to sleep for 2 weeks," and she just thought, "Cancel, cancel." "You will be in severe pain for a year," she said, "cancel, cancel." "And the step in your shoulder will never go away," and she said, "cancel, cancel." And then the doctor said, "This is how I handle it. I get up in the morning, have a pain pill, a cigar, and a Coke." And now she really thought, "cancel, cancel." And then his last statement made her realize that this wasn't what she wanted to create, so she separated her reality from this. And she just kept affirming the truth.
But, Susan, is it hard to convince yourself that this doctor could be, you know, is wrong? I mean, is it – because, you know, we grow up with this idea that, you know, they know better than us, or, I don't know, for whatever ideas we have stuck up there, you know?
Exactly. The doctor is God.
Yes. So how does, so she chose a new reality and it manifested in her body, but that's not easy for all of us to do.
No, it isn't. I just wanted to tell you a dramatic story of somebody who really has tremendous faith and was able to manifest this just by, and using the same method of affirmative prayer, just seeing, visualizing, and knowing the truth for herself. And she was able to do that. So, I mean, certainly if a person can do that, then couldn't we, if we're in a bad mood, just say a very simple prayer and change and suddenly be in a good mood?
Absolutely.
It's possible for us to do a prayer and to change our minds and thereby change our day.
Well, I know for a fact that when I was taking these Kabbalah classes and I had that red string on my wrist, I had a different attitude when I wore that red string and looked at it all day, every day, than when I stopped wearing it. I think I was a better person when I wore that red string and I had a constant reminder to be my higher self, treat other people as if I was speaking to God and I was God. You know what I'm saying? Because the red string meant certain things to me when I saw it, you know? And,
absolutely.
So I think I totally believe what you're saying. I just hesitate, to have listeners think, okay, this might cure cancer, you know. I mean, I don't want to give that impression, they may not go seek medical advice because they're going to believe in instant healing. You know, I can't take responsibility for something like that, so I have to have a disclaimer here. I think that using
instant healing, using these affirmative prayers along with your medical treatment, certainly is going to help your medical treatment. In fact, Larry Dossey, who is a medical doctor, uses prayer in his practice, wrote some best-selling books about that, one of which is called Healing Words, and he was speaking about using prayer along with these medical techniques. And definitely he did studies on it, scientific studies, that proved that using prayer along with the medical practice was more effective.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it. We obviously can, you know, change our mood, change our outlook. So, you know, why can't we change our physical body? I mean, I obviously experienced it with the Theta healing, but yet, you know, here I am, it was almost, in the moment, in the days following the Theta healing, it felt miraculous. But, you know, then you sort of lose that wonder and awe, and you sort of fall back into your same old, if you know what I mean.
Well, that's probably the reason for such rituals as putting the string around your wrist or whatever. I mean, that's not just a Kabbalah thing. That's also done in India where they put the red string. And it's also a saying that we have, put a string around your finger to remind you of such and such. So
Absolutely. There's
a reason why we do these little rituals, to help us to recall, to help us to remember who we really are, to help us. And this book, Instant Healing, can really help people because here it is in black and white. You can keep it on your bedstand, and then you think, oh, I'm really in a bad mood today. Why don't I use one of these prayers in here, and I'm going to feel better instantly. That's why it's called Instant Healing, because you're going to feel better instantly. And if you want to manifest something such as a love in your life or a car or a house or a whatever you want to manifest, a job, you know, there are prayers for that in this book as well. It doesn't mean that instantly you're going to get a call from from your husband-to-be, but certainly you're going to, once you say that prayer, you're going to change. Your attitude is going to change, and your attitude, your thoughts, your words, and your deeds are what creates your reality. So, all right, so now I have a different attitude about the possibility of attracting a love into my life. So now I have this new positive attitude, which helps me to have more positive thoughts, more positive speech about it, and more positive actions about it. Now I might actually go out on a date rather than sitting at home on Saturday night. I might actually join one of those online dating things or something and maybe start to meet some people. You know, you have to act, too. You can't just sit around all day and say prayers and affirmations. You actually have to do something about it. If you want to get a job, you have to go out and find the job. You got to do the applications. But the prayers are really going to help you with your attitude. And as you walk in to that interview, you're going to have a much better attitude, and you will more likely get the job.
Well, and I would imagine once you start to have some success with this, you feel more confident and you feel more empowered as well.
Absolutely. And like anything you learn in life, it just takes a little practice. Even
right.
prayer takes a little practice. You know, you do it more and you get more confident that it really works.
Okay. Well, Susan, we're about ready to wrap up here. Is there anything I haven't asked you that probably needs to be said about this?
Well, I would just encourage anyone who would like to change their conditions, who would like to change something in their life, to give this a try, give it a chance, because this is something that you will get results very quickly, and you will find that it will enhance your life. It doesn't mean stop doing everything else in your life, but it does mean that you can add this to your daily life and find that you are able to transform into more of the kind of person that you want to be, whatever that is, whether it's manifesting something greater in your life, whether it's forgiving yourself more, whether it's having more self-confidence, loving yourself more, loving others more, attracting love, attracting prosperity, having better health. You know, we all want changes in our life, and this can help you to make those changes. It's very practical. Very down to earth and very practical. Even though it's prayer, it's a very practical way of praying.
Okay. And so how do listeners find you? Do you have a website or what's the best way for them to find you, Susan?
Okay, my website is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. drsusan.org. And you can get my books anywhere. I have 8 books in print. I am on all the major websites, such as Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can call your local bookstore. This book is called Instant Healing. My name is Susan Shumsky, and you can call up your local bookstore, order the book, and they will get it in if they don't have it. And Amazon is very, very quick. That would be the quickest way to get it is on Amazon.com, so I recommend that.
Okay. Well, Susan, it's been great, and I will most definitely email you about coming back on the show to talk about your other books, about finding your life purpose and hearing, you know, what did you call it, your divine calling from God?
Right. The still small voice within, or your divine, your intuition, the voice within, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Susan, thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you tonight, and I think the information you gave listeners was very valuable. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Well, listeners, I just want to remind you to please catch any show from the archives that you miss, because I know most of you don't listen live. I know you catch everything from the archives for the most part, but if you're new to the show and didn't know that, that's where you go. There are almost 7 years of wonderful guests in the archives on the Blog Talk website. And also, before I moved to Blog Talk, I had a show on Passionate Internet Voices Radio, and those interviews actually live on my website. You can also listen via iTunes as well. And as we come to the close of tonight's show, I want you to remember something very important, lest we never forget. Adversaries of the sacred feminine, well, they tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, their sky gods, women in their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, disrespected, all of those things, and we're still living with it today. That's why, excuse me, here on the show I am dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal to you, however you identify with her, and I know you are too. Yes, we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women and men, to throw off the shackles, look under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past so that we know why things are the way they are, how they have come to be turned so on their head and so unnatural, and we are going to set things right. We are aiming for a new normal. Why? Because if we want to save ourselves and Mother Earth, our beloved Gaia, if we want the Earth and all of the species and women to not be commodities anymore, then we have no other choice. If we want to have fairness and wholeness and balance, if we want to have sanity and equity and fairness and partnership, well, it is women and our like-minded brothers armed with ideals of the sacred feminine who will set things back on course. So let me once again remind you of the show's two mottos. The first is all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepted for being self-evident. And that's from Arthur Schopenhauer. And then Gandhi said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. So listeners, especially if you're new to the show, please check out my website, KarenTate.com. I'm available to give talks to your group or teach a weekend workshop. There's also lots of free stuff on my website. There's meditations you can download. There's classes on my YouTube channel. There's wonderful articles and lots of great resources. Learn about my two books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and the more recent one, Walking an Ancient Path. I'm working on a third as we speak. Check out the goddess greeting cards and the sacred rattles of the Egyptian goddesses called a sistrum that we have available in the goddess store. And finally, please remember what Mother Nature teaches us. What you nurture and tend to survives and thrives. What you neglect withers on the vine, and that goes for every aspect of your life, your health, your work, your passion, your lovers, your family. And please, if you can, with that thought in mind, please send a donation to help keep Voices of the Sacred Feminine on the air. I pay for the airtime for you to be able to hear the insights and wisdom of our wonderful guests. And, you know, the airtime is no longer free as it once was. And the show is looking for a like-minded sponsor, and we do commercials. And I thank Joe Carson with Dancing with Gaia for allowing me to run her commercials. Remember, next week I will be away on vacation, but I'll be back on May 1st with elder and foremother Selena Fox returning to the show talking about our seasonal celebrations, followed by Michael Horowitz, author of Sisters of the Extreme, women whose names you'll probably recognize writing on their experiences using sacred hallucinogens. The names might surprise you: Maya Angelou, Louisa May Alcott, Charlotte Bronte, Billie Holiday, as well as some more contemporary women. So, good night, my dear listeners, my fans, my friends, my family and colleagues. May Goddess embrace you in her golden wings. And let me leave you with this blessing from the Goddess Temple of Orange County. Great Goddess, your signs and symbols are all around me, and I notice. Spring is in the air. The forms are changing. New life, new shape, new experiences. I accept all of it in the now moment, surrendering to the divine will of Goddess. And though all change, I know I am also the eternal witness in beauty. I am in peace. I pay attention to all your new signs. Thank you, Mother. All is well. Blessed be. So I'm going to close tonight's show with the music of Abigail Spinner McBride and her song, Arms of the Mother. Good night, listeners, and I'll be back on May 1st. You have lots of wonderful shows in the archives to keep you busy till then. Good night. And I don't know why the music is not playing. There we go.